listeners, it's me, Marnetta Larimer, host here at Impacting the Classroom. As always, we like to kick off our conversation by asking, what's impacting the classroom? We are beyond excited to be back for our fourth season, and we couldn't think of a better way to open the conversation than with our very own Teachstone CEO and class author, Bridget Hamry. This season, we are excited to dive deeper into the success stories of programs that have implemented class, trends that are impacting the classroom, and what to keep an eye on. Recently, Bridget published an op-ed in the 74 highlighting overlooked but important trends in education. She is joining us today to dive deeper into what might not be getting enough attention in the world of education. Bridget, welcome.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. But I'm more excited, actually, to listen to the rest of the season, because I always say, you know, sometimes when we talk about our work, we say it's better because of you, you being our partners doing this work. So I'm so excited to learn more from our partners ahead, but also happy to have this conversation with you today.
Yes, I couldn't think of a better partner to kick this season off. So one of the things that you highlight in the article is that there's often a gap between what's grabbing the attention in media and what we really need to focus on to ensure better outcomes for students. So what I see trending when I open up my phone or if I'm looking at the TV is usually around AI and how people are using it, as well as some of the newest ed tech solutions. Are you suggesting that we shouldn't be talking about these areas?
No, not at all, right? Like, we would be silly to ignore the fact that AI is going to radically change education. It's just the case. And, you know, I think there's a lot of smart people thinking about exactly what that's going to look like. You know, myself, I'm fascinated by the thought of what AI can do to make classrooms more effective. And, you know, there's actually this great op-ed in the New York Times the other day about how we're moving from a knowledge economy to a relationship economy, right? That the knowledge, still important, is gonna be less important because of the things that AI can do. But our humanity, our relationships, the way we interact, those are not gonna go away. So I think as we think about the classroom and the role of teachers, I actually hope that our work becomes even more important. But I don't want to talk about that today because it is important. So let's have that conversation down the road. But there's also, to your point, so many other things that sometimes get missed because of all the fascination with AI and other ed tech solutions.
Most definitely. I mean, when I thought about it, you know, and I was seeing the things, I was just thinking about streamlining some of those more administrative tasks, right? So that I could spend more time with the things that are important, the students in the classroom. So, but again, that's a whole nother conversation that we could spend a whole nother hour on.
We will.
So if we're not going to talk about that, what aren't we talking about that we need to be talking about?
Well, as a mother, I know you're also a mother. I certainly care a lot about how my kids are doing these days. Do I want them to learn? Absolutely. I have 2 9-year-olds and a 17-year-old. But I am deeply concerned about their mental health, not them specifically, but children's mental health. And what's interesting is there's plenty of conversation about students' mental health and the role that's playing. But at least in my observation, it kind of ends at that conversation of it being a problem. And when you get to the sort of solution side of the work, meaning what are schools talking about in terms of professional development, curriculum, it's not a part of the equation. And often they're saying, like, that's not my job, right? Somebody else come in here and deal with that problem. I think that's just a real issue because, I mean, we know it's not like children compartmentalize and like leave their mental health issues at the door of the school. They're bringing those into the classroom each and every day with them. And schools really need to think seriously about what they're doing to support children's mental health. I'll give you just one example. My son is at a local high school here. The number of fights that were happening at the school escalated so much. There was so much stress at the school. The principal actually became overwhelmed. He quit. The school closed for 2 days to sort of deal with the problem. And then they actually closed a third day because the teachers refused to come back for good measure because they were feeling so stressed and didn't feel like they had the support to deal with it. So even if you just care about students' learning outcomes, we really do have to care about mental health because, you know, kids aren't going to show up and get all of the good things we have to offer if we're not paying attention to that side of the equation. So
that's a really great example. And you're right. I feel like, and I understand, you know, when I think about COVID, and I feel like I always have to bring that up because it's still such a relevant part of the landscape, and, right? The outcomes that we are dealing with. But I remember my youngest was in high school, and that was a very important time in his developmental journey, right? To become isolated and things like that. And I say all that to say, you know, we encountered some problems and it did impact, right, the mental health of him returning, and the his educators were not equipped to support him in that capacity. And so we had to find other resources, you know, which also creates this thing for him, right? And the stigma with his, you know, cohort and like, you know, what they're thinking and things like that. And so impacted his relationships, right? And it, you know, that it was a struggle to get to get through that year. And so definitely, you know, it is not a siloed thing. Mental health, you know, is part of the whole experience in supporting children. And so I completely agree with what you're saying.
Yeah. And actually, we've seen absentee rates, actually, though they've gotten a little bit better, they're still much higher than they were pre-pandemic. So to your point, like the impact of the pandemic isn't over. And though those absenteeisms aren't probably all about mental health, I think a lot of it is. Again, even my own child has like said, I need a certain number of mental health days in any given year, right? To be able just to deal with the stress of being a teenager, et cetera. So, you know, what on the positive side, so we may not be talking about it a lot, but there's a lot of people thinking about this, right? Mm-hmm. And some really exciting work happening. And some of it is about system transformation. I think there are a lot of people who are recognizing our schools are not really well designed for the student of today and the kind of outcomes that we're trying to support today. I mean, so my younger kids are nine, twins. They're about to jump into middle school here in Charlottesville. And, you know, at the age of nine, jumping into middle school, where suddenly they have lots of different teachers, they have six times as many kids as at their elementary school. You know, I'm not sure how well that school is designed to really support the social and emotional and well-being of my kids. So there's great work happening around like system redesign. What do we need to rethink? But I would also say like that can be overwhelming. And I certainly know, you know, my friends, I have many friends who are teachers are like not going to wait for that system reform to come. But I think it is helpful just to remember there's something each and every one of us can do, each and every educator can do any day to just see a child who is struggling and take that extra moment to demonstrate care, concern, someone who can listen. So I guess, you know, I would just encourage all educators who are feeling overwhelmed who see that problem to recognize, A, I can't solve all the problems, right? Mm-hmm. And it can't be all my responsibility. But like, what is one thing? What is one student who I can make a difference with? And, you know, we all know and have heard the stories about the students who say, you know, it was that one teacher or that one athletic coach or that one who literally changed my life. So I think there is real power, especially because most teachers really do care and see the whole kid. They're not just seeing their reading outcomes or their math outcomes. And so it's really just encouraging them to lean into who they are as people.
Yes.
Is one of the key things I think we can do.
Yeah, because that's the most impactful, those relationships. Like my children really thrived with teachers they connected with who they felt genuinely cared about, right? And even as we're training, you know, and I'm sitting in, you know, an OBS training or, you know, a primer training or an ISET training that we deliver here. If we ask adults about their experiences as children and a teacher memory, they all have them. They all have these wonderful stories, and they're about relationship, connecting, individualization, right? Like all of those things that we know makes for great learning.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think big reform should come ahead around mental health and well-being, but also let's not stop and like, let's take those moments today in our busy lives to remember and see those kids who need us for sure.
Yeah. Oh, that was good. I love that. I feel like I can also talk about that for a really long time.
Right. And probably AI is not going to come in and solve that problem right away, right? Like, so let's just be clear, right? Maybe, I mean, I know there's AI, mental health and all that, but like people need people.
Right. They do. I mean, because even with how great AI is, right, and their ability to, you know, go on that journey, understand that child, you know, maybe even provide one-on-one scaffolding, yeah. right, and build, but the human nature of, yes, I loved math in the time that you assessed me, but now I'm not. I'm into something else. Like,
yeah,
they're, you know, they're not built at this time to really understand how the human condition is and how we shift and move.
Yeah.
Right? So,
no, absolutely. I always remember back very early in the pandemic, I had a good friend who's a middle school teacher, and he gave this example that has stuck with me for so long. He said one of the challenges he was facing, because all his kids had their camera off, and he said, it used to be when I gave a challenging task that I would see my students just look over at each other, right? Just to say like, wait, do you understand that? Do you have this? And like, that was gone, right? And technology can't replace those sort of subtle ways in which we interact with each other, see each other. I think that's a place and a space that we as humans are going to be responsible for, thankfully, for quite a long time.
Yeah, I agree. AI, take away the other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. This is why I'm here, right? Exactly. This is what I
need. If AI could do my laundry, then I'd be super happy. I don't see that happening in the near future, but.
Right. I also noticed that you mentioned in the article that there was little evidence to suggest that professional development actually correlates with student achievement. And so I'm just kind of building on what we talked about, you know, with teacher preparedness.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, right, teachers need what students need, what we all need, which is they need to be able to connect, engage, and like feel inspired by their opportunities to learn. And sadly, they rarely feel any of those things in PD, at least that's what they tell us. And for good reason, right? I won't name this teacher, but my girls came home the other day and told me, we had a teacher work day recently, and said, oh yeah, our teacher X told us that they were going to call in sick, that they always call in sick on PD days because they're completely useless. So I just love that this teacher felt so strongly about that, that they shared it with the students. But I get it, because this is a highly experienced, highly effective teacher. And I think, you know, with well-meaning administration, who I'm sure is working very hard to create meaningful opportunities for professional development, but I think we just make it really hard. What's sad is we know it works, right? So there's plenty of evidence that effective professional development is individualized to the needs based on data. It is something that people are actually interested in learning, that it isn't just abstract knowledge, but that it's something that is practical that they can do tomorrow in the classroom, and that it's not sort of sit and get one day, but that it's actually followed up in some sort of meaningful system of learning, applying, et cetera. So we know that works. Right. Like I say that, and you've done PD, you've taught PD. Does that align with your understanding of what works?
Absolutely. and you're right. There's gaps to that. Right. So oftentimes those PD, you know, those one-offs, you know, really are performative instead of being, you know, practical and practice focused, right? So that it can translate into the work in the classroom. So
what have you seen? Like, what are the barriers that you see? You know, we all know that's what works, but you work with lots of folks in the field. What do you see is making it hard for them to do that?
Hard for the systems to do that?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a big question, Bridget. From a system space, there is so much going on and so many things that they're having to do, account for, but there's also budgetary restrictions, things like that. But also a lot of administrators, you know, are out of tune with what's actually happening in the classroom, right? So there's that, right? There's what we think that you need to know, and then what's actually happening in the classroom that I actually need this support in.
Yeah.
And so I think there's just this disconnect in knowing what educators need in order to move forward and really be impactful with the students that they're caring for. So there's that. And then there's also too much all at once and not a real check-in to see if, you know, did you understand? Right? Yeah. Do you know how to move this forward? Right? What questions do you have? And I could just keep on going.
Yeah, please.
Lack of thinking about different learning styles, right? And so not everybody's going to learn if you're sitting and talking at me, you know, for this 3-hour block of time, right? There are other modalities and ways in which people learn, and just adapting to and leaning into those strategies would also be helpful. So, because sometimes you have a really great PD, but I mean, you're not reaching me where I'm at because, like, this is not how I learn. Like, so yes. I'll be doodling on a piece of paper, you know, waiting for it to feel.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I think you hit on so many of the things that I certainly see. You know, you talked first about just focus, right? And there's like so many things going on. And, you know, but I think we do observe that folks are trying to hit it all, right? We want to do our science of reading stuff and our SEL stuff and our class stuff. And it just becomes additive. And we rarely force ourselves to say, like, maybe less is more, right? I read this great book and they talked about the best example ever of like less is more is the people who are trying to get toddlers to ride a bike and they just kept adding to it. They like added more wheels and they added that thing where you like can push your toddler. And then somebody had the brilliant idea to start taking things away. And they took away the wheels. They took away the pedals and like the drive chain. And suddenly you have a balance bike. And then like a 1.5-year-old can ride a bike and actually it better prepares them. You know, that mentality of reduction is just not in our mindset. And I think that's a really big piece of it. I always say, like, in fact, we were having this conversation. I was with a bunch of colleagues at Teach for America yesterday, and we were having this conversation, like, choose anything. Like, there's so many things that I think all teachers could benefit from, but like, choose one that's really important. Focus on that with enough intensity so that you start to see change, and then you can move on to something else. But then that brings us to the other point is like, we don't have great data about whether things are working or not. It becomes like a checkbox, like we did this PD, so we were successful, as opposed to saying PD is actually not the goal, right? Right. Practice change is the goal, but we rarely are focused on that. And again, for good reasons, you know, to your third point about just resource, time, money, and those are just lacking right now. You know, I think of all the workforce challenges, you know, so even teachers who used to have some PD time are getting that pulled away because they just have to, you know, be in the classroom more because there mm-hmm. aren't enough teachers. So I think all of those things are real challenges. And I would just highlight one other I'll bring my sort of academic hat into this is, you know, over the course of my career, I've gotten millions of dollars to study PD. But frankly, like the research to practice, it's just kind of broken. Like, we have these evidence-based programs and they're really hard to scale. It's really hard to get things to work in the real world. And so I think we just have to really rethink how we're designing and studying professional development in a much more real-world context so that we actually are able to bring things to larger scale that work.
Is there anything that you're hopeful about?
Yeah, you know, I think ultimately, you know, it comes back to sort of partnerships and relationship. Like one of the things I'm excited about, we do have an evidence-based coaching model here at TeachJohn. I'm my teaching partner. And frankly, it has been hard to scale. We've done it in some places, but it doesn't always work. And I say work in quotes because it works. It demonstrates impact, but it's hard sometimes to get take up for lots of reasons. Yeah. But we're doing work with the Urban Assembly, which is in New York City, and a good friend and colleague of mine, Dave Adams, who have sort of fallen in love with class and my teaching partner and are really invested in saying like, well, what will it take to make it work? You know, it's less about, does it work? He said this yesterday, actually, I believe it works. The question is, how can we partner to make sure that it works here? And that requires us at TeachJohn and any sort of purveyor of a solution to be really flexible and think about how we might need to change to best meet the needs of the communities that we're working with without losing the sort of secret sauce that's sitting in it. So I'm certainly hopeful. I think, and honestly, I would say one other thing that I'm hopeful about is there's lots of examples of teachers sort of taking ownership of this for themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, teachers have so much expertise. And I think sometimes we as an organization, we as a field think it's like, we have to convey some kind of knowledge to them versus empowering them with the time and the resources they need to drive their own learning. So
if an organization or system has like limited dollars around professional development, what should they spend it on? Like what would you advise?
Oh gosh, that's a, now you're like pushing back on my focus piece. Well, I think first I would say, what does their data say, right? So hopefully they have some evidence from either their student outcome data or observational data around things that system-wide they're struggling with, right? Not some teachers are good with it, some teachers aren't. So I would say that is certainly key. But if I had to choose one thing, I recently sort of posted this on LinkedIn. In our world, we talk about regard for student perspectives or regard for adolescent perspectives. It's this idea that we want to support our children's autonomy, give them more opportunities for independence, to really listen to their voice, to sort of go with the flow of their ideas and thinking. And I would say, our research sort of, like, very few teachers have been taught to teach that way. Right. And it's something that almost every teacher who learns about it takes something away that they can apply in the classroom. So I think that this idea of autonomy and the capabilities that are sitting in our students is just something that I would say almost every teacher could probably use a little more focus on. I don't know. What about you, Marnetta? You spent lots of time observing classrooms. What would you focus on?
Yeah, no, I love what you just said. And I just want to say, like, that parallels that, you know, adult interaction, right? Like, it's a parallel process. Like, the relationships aren't just for the classroom, right? It's also in those adult interactions, like, in those relationships. But that's all I was hearing. I was just like, oh my gosh, the parallel. It's just speaking so loudly. Because it's the same thing, right? But anyway, what was your question again?
I was just like, is there something that, you know, in all the thousands of classrooms you've watched, like, what would be one thing that you think system-wide teachers could use some additional support in?
Well, if I was thinking system-wide, it really comes down to what you said, right? Like, what is the data saying? Unfortunately, not everyone has adopted class, right? Which is, I mean, gosh, which is really important.
That would just solve all the world's problems.
Right? Because I think that's where it sits. The biggest piece when I observed classrooms or when I was working, you know, as a professor, like, is getting educators to understand that, you know, in order to teach math or language or, you know, like, anything, it really comes down to how the child feels in their relationship with you.
Yeah.
Right. I can have a doctorate and say all the things. I can know all the things. But if that child or even an adult doesn't think I'm there for them or care about them or what, it doesn't mean anything. They don't hear any of it. There's nothing happens. There's no transfer of knowledge. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's what I have to say about that.
Well, you know what's interesting too? I always tell this story about the development of class, that when we were developing the secondary version of class, we were doing it with very esteemed partners and colleagues at the University of Virginia School of Education, who are amazing, but they're people who are trained to be math educators or English language arts educators. So this whole framework around interactions was new to them. But this particular dimension, regard for adolescent perspectives, they were not fans. In fact, one of them said, I get you score class on a 1-7 scale. This should, like, the high point is a 4 for this one, right? So this idea that we can give our students too much autonomy, that if we give them too much voice and choice, that we're going to, like, lose control. I think that's a real fear of individual teachers and of systems that I think is a real blocker to some progress. I know my teenager would feel strongly about that particular idea.
Again, I have so many stories. You know, if there's an expectant expertise of working scissors, right, and being able to use scissors at age 4, why do they not have these opportunities to grow into that and use them so that they can master them in that, right? So that lack of access and then expecting children to master skills in a very unrealistic period of time, right? Yeah. It is about, you know, if I give them scissors too early, right? Like, you know, it's just that control. And, like, we just kind of have to, let go of some of that.
Take a breath.
Let go of some of that and actually understand that when children feel like this is their space, they have autonomy. They can do things. They can grow. They can experiment. That's actually better. And it makes your job easier because you have less things to do, you know?
But to go back to that, you know, this is not a topic of headlines today in our paper, right? So it's hard for teachers to have the place and the space to actually make time for focusing on those kinds of things when they're being sort of drilled around all of the other things and demands that are placed upon them. So
much stuff. But yeah, again, another great discussion. I love the challenging, right?
Always hard, right? Because we can sit here and have this conversation. It's like, you know, being in that leader seat, which I know you have been, it's a whole different set of challenges, right? Easy to talk about, much harder to do in reality, for sure.
Definitely, definitely. And I think that's also what I love about this work is just the intent that we have in staying grounded, you know? So even though I'm no longer in a classroom, like there's this real push to make sure that we stay grounded and we understand how to support the field in a way that makes a difference. I'm not trying to get a raise, but that's, you know, what I love about working here.
I'm glad you feel that way.
So let's shift into accountability systems.
Oh boy, what a good topic.
Why are they important? What should they account for?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think to start just where you left off, right? And to the name of this podcast, Impacting the Classroom. So I would just start there. Like, accountability systems have to be designed to actually touch the classroom. And frankly, often they're designed in ways that nothing that happens in the accountability system is either measuring or changing anything that children actually experience. So that idea of sort of thinking from the top about how am I going to hold this system accountable for something that actually will lead to better outcomes for kids? I mean, as a centering principle, there's that. I would also just say, and again, this came up in my conversation with a bunch of super smart people in this conversation with Teach for America yesterday, is in many places and spaces, accountability has now gotten a bad name, right? It is like a word we don't talk about. Teacher evaluation sort of came and went, you know, student assessments, you know, are a mess, and lots of people think they shouldn't happen. And I get that for sure. And at the same time, I think at base, our students, our children, our adolescents deserve to be in classrooms that can help them thrive, right? That just seems like a baseline. And if we're going to give tax dollars to systems, I think some measure of accountability is incredibly important. It's not necessarily popular, so people feel free to disagree. But then it ultimately comes down to how do you actually design the accountability system to do what we said, to like not just be a set of rules, a set of check boxes, but to truly meaningfully change what's happening in the classroom. So in our experience, there's a few things I think that make a difference. Number one is just choosing things to hold people accountable for that actually matter, right? So in the early childhood space, there's just great examples of that. For a long time, we were holding systems accountable for things like the level of mulch, which important from a health and safety perspective, so I'm not saying it's not important, but are probably not going to change children's learning and development. So focusing on things that matter first and foremost is important. And then designing a system so that it isn't just about providing a set of numbers that get you money, right? Which often these things sort of end up being. But can you design the system so that the measures that are being used for accountability are also useful for improvement? And, you know, where we've seen success in this space is accountability systems where, you know, where people really are using class or other measures to provide meaningful feedback to individual teachers, to programs, and they're really sort of bought into it, not just as something that is being done to them, but something that they're doing because they know that it's important and it's going to deliver the kinds of outcomes that they all ultimately care about. So I think focusing on what matters, you know, designing for improvement. And then I think there's a third too, which is just setting systems up for success. You know, at TFA, they were talking about the ecosystem of support that their core members have to be able to be successful. And if that's not in place, right, if they are left alone on an island, and then we expect them to reach some like incredible level of teaching quality, that's just not reasonable. That's not going to happen. So I think making sure that systems and individuals within systems who have some level of accountability have the supports that they need to be able to reach those goals is also, you know, really critically important.
I love that. I'm sure our listeners will find that very, very helpful. Teach for America has been a wonderful partner. I love that you're still having those really thoughtful conversations.
Yeah, I mean, we learn so much from our partners. And so I just love sitting and listening to, frankly, you know, some of it's exciting, like some of the stuff that's going well, but also some of the things that are a real challenge. So, you know, I'll give you one, and I think it's something we've talked about a lot is, you know, especially in the broader sort of K-12 space, when we talk about relationships and interactions, we buy in, right? But there's many folks who are like, what's all this soft stuff, right? Yeah. I care about instruction. And then we're like, no, no, we measure instruction. We care about instruction too. And then they read through the class. They're like, no, 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 not that kind of instruction, right? I mean, real instruction. So I think that was one of the challenges I think we spent a lot of time talking about. Like, let's just interrogate that a little bit, right? Like, of course we care about instruction. Of course we measure instruction, but let's think about, you know, how much it matters that, you know, a good curriculum is important, but that's just a box unless teachers know how to use it, how to provide feedback, how to get kids to think. So, but that's not, you know, that's not an easy sell to folks who have been trained about one vision, about what instruction is, which is highly content focused. So,
well, it is content focused because thinking about the broader space, you know, kindergarten through 12, I know, you know, at certain ages, I did not want to teach because of standardized testing and it really just having to prepare and spend your working hours getting children ready for this test.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So let's talk about it. You kind of alluded to it a little bit, right? What is the problem with standardized testing? What doesn't it capture?
Yeah. I mean, again, to go back to the accountability, I'm not a there should be no tests kind of person, because I think we do need information. The question is, how good are those assessments? Are they really measuring what matters? How equitable are those assessments in really assessing the skills across the broad spectrum of our population? And I think we frankly have a ways to go on all of those fronts, you know, in terms of what we measure. You know, and this is not going to be news to anyone here in the conversation we've had, but very few systems measure the kinds of skills we've been talking about. Students' abilities to relate, to regulate their behavior, to think, to communicate to each other. People say those things matter, but then we don't communicate that they matter because we're not assessing them. We're not sort of, you know, the whole what get measured, get done. We don't measure them. Does that say they don't matter? So, you know, that said, I will say there's lots of folks who are focused on this. And I think there is going to be a shift. I just saw in the news yesterday that California included some of the social emotional learning competencies into their state standards. Other states have done that. So that's huge. And there's really interesting work happening on, like, how do you assess those skills, especially for younger students? It's a little easier for older students. You can, you know, do some, you know, can have students fill out surveys as an example, and there's great work happening in that space. But with young kids, I don't know, Marinetta, how might you assess relationship skills in a 4 or 5-year-old?
Ooh, goodness. That's a really good question. Look, let me go back into my classroom. Right, cooperating with others in the classroom, right?
Yeah.
Being able to share materials, play in the block center with, you know, another child, having a dispute and being able to articulate what is wrong and work through a solution, yeah. Right? So lots of different ways that you can do that.
Yeah.
Just existing and interacting in the classroom with students.
So
not a you know what I mean?
It's true, because it's very hard to sort of compartmentalize those into, like, take this 5-minute assessment and we're going to tell whether you have relationship skills or not.
Right.
But there's a challenge to that, because I think people do want, especially for more summative assessments, they have a hard time relying on just teacher observations. Are they reliable? Are they equitable? So there is a desire sometimes to think, can we directly assess these skills? And again, I think there's some progress in that space. There's fun stuff about, you know, whether young kids can pick up on social cues from faces.
Right.
There's this fun task that I always forget the name. It's HTKS, I think, head, toes, knees, shoulders, like, which basically tests kids' self-regulation. Can you stop and do the opposite thing that I'm telling you to do? So the Gates Foundation is actually funding a bunch of research in this space, because I think we recognize We can't fault systems for not measuring these things when we don't have good ways to measure them. So I'm optimistic in this particular space, in part because all of our business leaders, you know, you're a leader here at Deachstone, I would say this, like the skills that we've been talking about, relationships, communication, thinking, like those are the skills that matter in today's workforce. They're going to keep mattering more. So I think the science has been telling this for a long time, but I think as the business community weighs in, I think these kinds of skills are going to get more and more attention. So
I love it. Like one of the things that you said that just tickled me pink on the inside, right? Was, you know, these tests don't evaluate like critical thinking, right? Creativity, like artistic ability, right? Like there are so many other things that cannot be measured in so many of these assessments that are out.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially, again, the diversity of the way the kids think, the diversity of, you know, I think that's another space where we have to get smarter, ourselves included, about how do we truly represent the different ways kids may express their knowledge, their expertise, their thinking.
How they learn. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I mean, I have become, you know, we at Teachstone do all those kinds of assessments, the DISC, et cetera. And, you know, learning more about who you are as a leader helps you see how people do demonstrate these skills in very different ways. So lots to learn in that space for sure.
Yes. So this time always goes by so fast. Is there anything else we aren't talking about that you want to talk about?
You know, one thing, and again, this maybe is getting some press on the, like, it's a problem side, but less on the solution side. It's just teacher stress. Teacher well-being. It is getting press, I think, mostly because of the workforce shortages, mm-hmm. right? So people, I guess we better pay attention because teachers are dropping out. But, you know, I hope that we care about it from a humanity perspective, right? This, like, caring about people's mental health is core to any job, right? If educators aren't feeling good, if they aren't feeling like they have the mental capacity to do the incredibly hard work that they do every day, then none of this other stuff that we've talked about is going to make a difference. It's like that example they always give about, you know, when you're in an airplane and the airplane's crashing and you as a parent have to give yourself the oxygen first, right? Like when are we going to realize that it's educators? And, you know, there's this great intervention that was developed by a friend of mine, Tish Jennings, called CARE. And it's based on mindfulness and it teaches teachers mindfulness. And there's great evidence that it impacts both class interactions as well as student outcomes. But what I love about it is when I've talked to teachers who've gone through it, they said something like this, like, it is the first professional development I've ever had, which is just about me. It's not about my teaching. It's not about some assessment. It's about me. And that message that caring about you as a person is important, frankly, just because it's important. But it's also important because of that idea that it's foundational to everything else, I think is just one we all, ourselves included, probably need to learn more. Just let's make sure to give the care and support and time and resource and money to the educators that they deserve.
You're right. You cannot pour from an empty cup, which is what so many of our educators do, right? They are so much care before themselves, right? Like, you know, their mother and all that come through their door or whatever. And the reason why it's also important is because how I move and how I act and how I'm feeling and how I react to things is modeling that for the children in my class. So whether directly or indirectly, they are learning through those processes. So if I have everything that I need, then I'm able to do what I need to do in a way that models positive things, right, for the children in my space.
I was just going to share a moment of truth here. So my children got me a present for Christmas. They got me many presents, but this was one. And it's a deck of Calm. And they said, Mom, this is for those moments when you're feeling stressed. And I was like, I think that's a little bit of a message that maybe I need to do some of my meditation a little bit more. Because if they're seeing it, then probably I have some work to do. So,
but on the positive side, you have created such an open, honest relationship that they were able to tell me you about it.
Thanks for that positive spin. Wow. I appreciate you.
You know, they didn't just suffer in silence and just, you know, talk behind closed doors. They're just like, hey, Ma, give.
And also they did it in such a kind way, right? It wasn't like, Mom, stop yelling at us. It was, Mom, you might benefit from some of these moments of calm.
I love it. Nice, collaborative, supportive environment you have at your house.
Yeah. Don't come in class score on certain times of life. But yes, I try.
Believe it or not, we are like almost at time. So before we head out, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, I mean, maybe just that there's what we started with and what we ended with, right? What we ended with was take a moment of care for yourself. Don't forget that. It's so critical to all of us. I'm going to take that advice to myself and like get out for a walk. And where we started, which was pay attention to one person who you know needs you and just do that little thing that they're going to see. So if we could all spend a little more time paying it forward like that, I feel like, you know, life would at least be a little easier. It's not going to solve the world's problems, but it'll certainly have an impact.
I'm going to add another layer. I would love to see, you know, that interaction, that one person, that one child, be a child that you don't normally interact with, right?
Oh, I love that.
Change that life, right?
Yeah.
Because we lean into the comfortable and the familiar, that outgoing child, right?
Like the people who make us comfortable.
Yeah. That part. I mean, I was a feisty child, believe it or not. And I know. And I know when I look back at my school days, I know which teachers were not very excited about my energy in the classroom. Mm. And it has nothing to do with me. It's just my personality did not match theirs, right? And so that's really isolating, right? And
yes.
You know, so because you want this thing, you want that connection. And as a child, you don't know what the problem is. As an adult, I know. I'm like, oh, I get it, you know? But I don't know that. I didn't know that as a child. So lean into, stretch yourself, get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So that way you guys can build that comfortability together.
I love it. You know, I will just end with this. There's a middle school that I heard about that put pictures of every single kid in the middle school in their teacher lounge and just had for a week, they had teachers put a little like sticker anytime they had a positive interaction with one of the students. And at the end of the week, they gathered and they looked at all the students who didn't have any stickers. And the next week, they all made commitments to getting out and touching those kids. So I think you're
talk about accountability.
Yes. I love it. That's accountability.
All right. We're at time. This is going to be an amazing season. Thank you so much, Bridget Hamry.
Thank you, Marnetta. Great to see you.
You too. Listeners, we hope you enjoyed today's conversation and are ready to follow along for another great season. You can find today's episode and transcript on our website, teachstone.com/podcast. And we'd love to know what you think. Please let us know by dropping us a like and a comment on Apple Podcasts or whatever your favorite podcast platform may be. Have a hot topic you want to discuss or recommend? Did an episode have an impact for you or your organization and you want to share? Or you just want to say, hello, Marnetta? Send us an email at podcast@teachstone.com. This will help us to continue to create great content that is just for you. And as always, behind great leading and teaching are powerful interactions. Let's build that culture together.
Thank you to today's team. Marnetta Larimer is our host. Our producers are Isabella Henriksen and me, Megan Cornwell. Editing help is from Castos. You can find Impacting the Classroom on our website at teachstone.com/podcasts, where you can also listen to our other show, Teaching with Class. Impacting the Classroom is a Teachstone production.